Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're very welcome along to the Big Red Bench on this Sunday evening. A busy show coming your way between now and 7 o'clock as we wrap up Ireland's fantastic win over Scotland today.
Front foot we got off to. You know, it just takes a bit of pressure off in the game. It means they have to chase it a little bit. They have to take a few more risks than we do. And
we'll hear from Joe Schmidt in a bit and from Rory Best, the captain, as well. An analysis from our good friend, the Ireland legend, Moss Finn. Also on the show today, we will have reaction from Douglas's win over Ballincollig. Today, reaction from Imo Killies. They continue their quest for three in a row. Their win over Sarah's going to talk about refereeing in Cork hurling. Going to talk to Cork under 20 captain Peter O'Driscoll, and we're going to talk to local side Everton as well. That's all to come to you now at 7 o'clock on the Big Red Bench. My name is Rory O'Hagan, here with you until 7 p.m. I'm still a little shell-shocked after having Anna Geary and Killian Pettit scream flying without wings down the speakers to me just before we started the show. Still not right for me, to be perfectly honest.
It would set you back going into try to do an hour show, really. Because they were out in the office doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Kind of throw you off a bit.
A little bit, yeah. No, I did join in, admittedly, right? But
you bought tickets last week.
Shush. I've got street cred to maintain. Half a Cork bought tickets for it, but looks of them. It's going to be a fantastic gig in Páirc Uí Chaoimh next year, featuring Farmers Cove Ramblers goalkeeper Nicky Byrne headlining on stage with Westlife. But yeah, busy show coming your way now between now and 7 o'clock. Got to introduce Kieran O'Regan, so that's Kieran O'Regan.
Sound.
I'm nice that
I'm, I won't be doing a whole pile of Westlife singing. I'm after burning my tongue.
How?
I made coffee and I just made it too hot.
Yeah, I'm grand for coffee. Thanks for the offer anyway.
Well, you can have mine because I can't drink it now.
God, love you. Try a load of Sudocrem on your tongue would be grand.
My tongue, yeah. Sound.
Alright, get up to the end. We might actually break out into a sports show at some point in this hour. Fingers crossed, folks. Let's see how that pans out.
Yeah, well, I'll bring it back down to earth with some sports saying Gaelic games, saying the Senior Football Championship. Douglas and Ballincollig went head-to-head earlier on today in the County Senior Championship quarter-final in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. It finished 1-12 to 9 points in favour of Douglas. We'll hear from the Douglas manager, Mick Evans, later on in the Premier Intermediate Football Championship quarter-final. Bantry Blues will need a replay there with Bandon. That game going finishing in a draw, 1-13 apiece in Dunmanway. In the Intermediate Football Championship, Gabriel Rangers had a 2-point win over Kinsale, 12 points to 10, while Drumtariff and Ballydesmond, the Duhallow rivalry there, 3-9 to 1-15. That's, I was never good at maths, Roar, but I make that out to be a draw, 3-9 to 1-15. So they'll have to do that all over again. Kildare and Yall were in action earlier on as well. It finished in a win for Kildare, 1-13 to 2-7. The Bears were taking on Ahabulloch, but it was Ahabulloch who came through there, 3-9 to 1-8. Also, Mill Street were in action against Glanworth today, and it was Mill Street who won by a point, 1-13 to 3 goals and 6 points. In the County Junior A Hurling Championship, Russell Rovers overcame Airogue's second team, 2-22 to 1-9, and Carrick Navarre overcame Clodove's second team, 1-16 to 1-11. A lot of people tipping Carrick Navarre and Russell Rovers, who played in the East Cork final 2 or 3 weeks ago, to make the county final against each other as well. It could be a cracker. There's a very strong possibility that could happen, but there's a good few other matches to happen before that could possibly happen. In the County Camogie Championship, Sars and Carbery, a very exciting game there. It finished 2-14 to 2-13 in favour of Sars. That was after extra time, so a very competitive game there down in Castle Road. The other game was the Bears and Courcy Rovers, 5-12 to 1-5 was how it finished in favour of the Bears. And there's another match as well, Glen Rovers and Killa currently in action down in Castle Road. That's the third game of a triple header, so lots of action down in the Mahon venue at the moment, but we'll get you a score on that very shortly. There doesn't seem to be anything online at the moment, but not in Cork actually, Roar, but an amazing stat in Waterford. The Ladies Senior Football Championship final took place, and Ballymacarbery have won their 38th title in a row. It's till the day they won their 37th
in
title last year. In a row, like, yeah. And it's a competitive enough championship.
Ballymacarbery, obviously, class.
They really are a very strong outfit. But Waterford ladies footballers are after coming on a bit as well. But it's phenomenal. Michael Ryan managed Waterford there for a few years. He started all this in Ballymacarbery a long number of years ago. His daughter is still playing. She's one of the main players. She's one of the main players for Waterford as well, Michelle Ryan. But yeah, 38 titles.
That's sensational.
I don't know, has that ever been done before?
Like, to split Ballymacarbery in two.
They will. Well, do you know what? See, this is the thing. They will have to, because they pull. They will have to, because they pull from the whole of West Waterford. Right. They've Clonmel people from Clonmel coming down to them as well. So they're going to have to do something there, and possibly splitting them in two is the right thing to do. You might start that petition later online. I think a lot of people will be calling for that. In the Premier League, Liverpool in action against Chelsea at the moment.
Chelsea have just gotten a goal back, actually. So it's now Chelsea 1, Liverpool 2. 78 minutes on the clock there. It was N'Golo Kante got the goal for Chelsea just a couple, about 8 minutes ago. Roberto Firmino, Trent Alexander-Arnold had gotten the goal to Liverpool in the first half. They looked to be cruising. Chelsea had a goal ruled out thanks to VAR. I don't like saying it out loud. I hate VAR. I absolutely hate it. Ruins the flow of games.
Yeah.
The offside decision yesterday just ruined it for me. So yeah, look, I'm not a huge fan of it, but look, it is what it is. But that was ruled out. He was offside, like, but yeah. Do you know, it was marginal. It's based on the interpretation of the VAR team when the ball is actually hit by the attacking player before it goes to the player who's in an offside position. And look, I'm not a huge fan of it, but it is what it is.
Yeah, but yesterday was a bit ridiculous.
Millimeters.
You know.
In a situation like that, you've got to give the benefit of the doubt to the attacker. It's going to ruin the game.
It Spurs again. They just are having no luck whatsoever with VAR at all, Spurs. Yeah. I don't know, what does Richie Pochettino even think anymore? You know, it's like a running joke at this stage.
Yeah, it is. It's annoying, but there's 11 minutes now on the clock at Stamford Bridge, and Chelsea pushing for an equaliser. Chelsea 1, Liverpool 2.
Yeah, earlier on today, Man United were beaten away from home again. They missed out on the chance to go into the top four. That finished 2-0 to West Ham.
They were absolutely dreadful. We get a report from Ian Beach.
West Ham 2, Manchester United 0. Andre Yarmolenko's first half goal and a second half free kick from Aaron Cresswell mean that for the second season in a row, West Ham beat Manchester United at home, and United didn't really look like they had a method for scoring, to be honest, especially once Marcus Rashford went off injured. That's going to be a concern for United ongoing, but a real buzz around the London Stadium as West Ham celebrate. West Ham 2, Manchester United 0.
Yeah, big fan of the stadium announcer playing the Beatles Twist and Shout after that great game as well. Just getting an update from Chelsea and Liverpool. We go to Joe Rawson, who's at Stamford Bridge.
Chelsea have just pulled a goal back, and what a fantastic hit it was from N'Golo Kante, who turned inside Fabinho at the edge of the Chelsea area, rolled to inside the box and let one go that fired into the top of the left-hand corner of Adrian's goal. The Liverpool stopper had no chance. It means that Chelsea are back in this. Earlier, Trent Alexander-Arnold and Firmino's first half goals had given the Merseysiders the lead. We're in for a frantic final 20 minutes or so as Jurgen Klopp's team hope to preserve their 100% start to the Premier League season. Chelsea 1, Liverpool 2.
That report was filed quite a bit ago, but there is 10 minutes left as Chelsea 1, Liverpool 2.
Yeah, Man United, really, like, even during the week against Astana, only, you know, kind of stumbling over the line with a 1-0 win.
I was watched a bit of a match today. They were poor, no imagination, no drive, no impetus, no cutting edge. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer lost in the sideline. Wonder how long he's going to last in the job, the way things are going. And a very deep squad. Marcus Rashford going off injured today with a groin injury. Paul Pogba not in the squad today. It's not a good situation. Not going to be a good season for Manchester United, you think?
Yeah, in the other game then as well, there was a draw. Crystal Palace and Wolves won apiece in that game. In the Scottish Premiership, finished Celtic 3, Kilmarnock 1. Elsewhere, Rangers, they had a comprehensive 4-0 win over St Johnstone. In rugby, Ireland sit top of Pool A at the World Cup with host Japan. Joe Schmidt's side enjoyed a 27-3 bonus point win win over Scotland earlier on this morning. Took just 6 minutes for James Ryan to go over the line for Ireland's first try. He's having a phenomenal year, actually, James. Touted already to be in the team of the tournament, but Rory Best, Andrew Conway and Tadhg Furlong also going over the line there. Next up for Ireland is a clash against host Japan next Saturday morning. Italy coach Conor O'Shea says there was too many mistakes in his side's opening win of the tournament. They beat Namibia 47-22 in Osaka earlier and do sit top of Pool B. However, the Limerick man is looking for them to improve ahead of their game against Canada. And England got their campaign off to a win in start in Pool C. They beat Tonga 35-3.
10-man Arsenal have just equalised against Aston Villa. Arsenal 2, Aston Villa 2. Callum Chambers with the goal for the Gunners there, and 8 minutes to go.
Yeah, thanks, Roar. In golf, Danny Willett, he's won the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth. He finished 20 under par, 3 clear of John Rahm. Rory McIlroy was best of the Irish on 11 under. Shane Lowry finished up a shot further back on 11 under, or 10 under, while Patrick Arrington finished up level par. In motorsport, Sebastian Vettel has won the Singapore Grand Prix. He finished ahead of his Ferrari teammate Charles Leclerc, with Max Verstappen in third and Lewis Hamilton in fourth. In athletics, Lee Vale's Sinead O'Connor has won the Echo Women's Mini Marathon, with her Lee Vale teammate Lisa Hegarty in second, and Wallgrass Hills' Claire O'Brien in third. Over 7,000 runners took part in that this afternoon, but two of them weren't us.
No.
Maybe next year.
Maybe next year. We should actually do it next year.
You know, it's metaphorical.
No, I'm not joking. We'll do the mini marathon next year. That's it sorted. I'll get the wigs. All right, we are going to start with rugby and Ireland's fantastic win. As Ciarán just mentioned, 27 points to 3 over Scotland this morning. Top of Pool A now, along with the hosts, Japan. We're joined by our good friend, the former Ireland and Munster legend, Moss Finn, to discuss it. Moss, that was pretty much perfect from Ireland today, wasn't it?
A wonderful start to the World Rugby Cup. Fantastic. To as good as we could have expected. You know, we were a bit down in the dumps perhaps after the demise of England and the lacklustre performances in the friendlies leading up to this. But I think Joe Smith has answered a lot of questions. We seem to be very, very well prepared and things went our way very much. It was a wonderful start to the campaign.
How disappointing were Scotland, though?
I would accept that Scotland didn't play particularly well, but then again, you can only play what's in front of you, and we sort of made it difficult for them, is the way I would put it, rather than them playing badly. Scotland play a high tempo game, quick ball from Rooks, you know, Stuart Hogg, Finn Russell playing off the cuff type of thing, and I don't think the greasy ball sort of suited that, so that played into our arms a bit, but We came up front, we gave them ball, and they got ball going on the backward foot more, and we put pressure on them, which in turn made them make mistakes, and we capitalised on their mistakes. But we were ready for it, we were up for it, and you know, everything went well. Phyllis played very, very well. You know, our main men came back to form, particularly Sexton and Conor Murray, who are the heartbeat of the team.
I was going to say, Conor Murray ran the show for Ireland today, but it was the work of the pack was top-notch, and that gave Murray the platform to perform, really.
Absolutely. I mean, rugby is a game of possession. I've said it 100 times. If you have the ball, it means the opposition don't have it, so they can't play. We got ball on the forward foot from sterling performances from the likes of Tadhg Furlong, Henderson, Van der Fleer and Conan when he came on. We got ball on the forward foot, and that's exactly what you want, and we executed extremely well. I mean, Furlong hasn't played particularly well since he had 3 or 4 great tests there with the Lions a couple of years ago. He was outstanding, and if you're standing up on the right-hand side of the scrum, it's a great start. And Henderson, the same, was a great deputy with them. The whole pack, CJ Stander as well, it was fantastic. We got ball on the forward foot, as you said. Murray had a look, did the right thing all the time, and you know, he's had an indifferent year or so. So it was wonderful to see the main men doing so well, particularly against a Scottish team that have caused us difficulty down the years.
Roar mentioned there, you know, how bad were Scotland, but was it that Ireland didn't leave them play their game?
Oh, absolutely. And, well, I think the situation, the wet ball didn't help their fast tempo game either, because when you're playing with a wet ball, you have to catch it sort of first before you pass it on, whereas if there's a dry ball, you maybe are able to flick it, not take it into your chest as much. Like, so the actual conditions didn't help, but the fact that they were on the hind foot, it's very difficult for them to play a high tempo game in that situation, and I think they were trying to force the game too much, which didn't help. And the harder they tried, the sort of worse it got. You know, and we capitalised on that. But having said that, we were in their face. We were the guys on the forward foot. And that makes a terrible difference at that level. Plus the fact that Finn Russell really at 10 had a pretty poor game, you must say. But we were as much a cause of that as perhaps himself.
Would you be worried about any injuries there? They took Johnny Sexton off. Looked like he might have had a touch of a groiner hamstring issue.
It did, and he hadn't been taking the place kicks, which is unusual. Yeah. He had stopped taking the place kicks, which is unusual. Peter Romani, I'm not too sure. Bundyaki or HIA, I think. But they didn't look anything like anything serious. I'd be a bit worried about Peter Romani because we need the back rowers of his quality. I mean, the Van der Fleer did very well. Conan did very well. But we're already down Sean O'Brien and Levy, two world-class back rows. So if we were to lose another back row going through the tournament, that wouldn't be good. But he didn't look too serious going off, so hopefully it was only a knock. But he, the likes of Peter now would be imperative to us, particularly without Dan Levy and Sean O'Brien.
Yeah, I think it's Omani and Aki are going to had HIA ones today. So with a six-day turnaround, it's probably unlikely they're going to play next weekend.
Unlikely, and I think the most salient point about next week was answered today, because on the ground, I hear that Japan were going to target the team that were beaten today. Mm. In other words, they would see the team that was beaten today as the most vulnerable and the best chance for them to come second. So there's perhaps a chance that Japan may not put out their best side against us next Saturday and save the best for last against Scotland. That could be a trend. You know, they might say Ireland are much too good to target to try and beat. We'll save our best for Scotland. So that could be a plus for us in the six-day turnaround, you know.
As you mentioned, Moss, a number of players standing up today. Andrew Conway, Jordan Larmour, when they were included in the team, maybe some eyebrows raised over that, but they certainly answered their doubters today.
Absolutely. Larmour, who had a couple of iffy performances at fullback when Smith picked him before, was very assured under the high ball force, which is the most important thing. You have to catch it first before you do anything. He did that extremely well. He came out of defence extremely well and turned defence into attack. And like him, I was very happy for Conway to get the try in particular. Mm. He's been a wonderful player. I remember him being described one time as the best schoolboy player that ever came out of Blackrock College, which is saying a lot. But he's had a very rough start. He came down to Munster from Leinster. He's been injured a good bit, but he's always been a quality player who gives his all. And he's a great guy to win the ball in the air offensively, and he's a great guy to catch it defensively. And it was great to see him get picked, even though a lot of people wouldn't have picked him. And it was great to see Larmour picked. And the two of them were absolutely excellent. And the crowning glory, obviously, was the try for Conway, which both of them contributed to. It was great to see it, and great to see Conway rewarded for his persistence. He's 28 now, but he hasn't played a lot because he's been in and out and injuries and all that. But he is a very good competitor. And after today, I think his stock would even get higher, because the better they'll get, and they'll get confidence from that.
Have expectations been raised after today's performance, you think?
Well, you know, if we wanted to be absolutely analytical, and I've said it many times, we can perform against anybody in the world with the possible exception of England, South Africa and New Zealand. And I mentioned the three of them because I think they're the three nations in the world who can possibly overpower us. And if we're not overpowered, we can play anyone. And I don't think Wales are any of the other teams, with the exception of the three I named, will overpower us. So I think we will always have a great chance to get teams that don't steamroll us. So I would be hopeful. My expectation is possibly a little bit higher, but I would be fearful of the physicality of South Africa come quarter-final time, because they demolished New Zealand there in the first 20 minutes yesterday. I know they were beaten, but the raw power that they have up front is frightening.
I suppose more than likely Ireland are going to be taking on South Africa now, as you mentioned, Moss. Do you think maybe the backroom staff are already looking ahead to that?
I would say we are. I mean, you know, Japan up first up next, but we are going to qualify now, and we should qualify in number one position, having beaten Scotland. That was the importance of today. Yeah. That was imperative to win today. And I would far prefer to be playing South Africa than New Zealand. Yeah. And I think they'll be looking to that. And that's why we need the likes of Peter. We need a clean bill of health for that, so that we can... if we're playing against South Africa, which they are going to try and beat us up, we'll need 10 forwards at least to combat that for 80 minutes, you know, because they are a fearful team physically. I think we can stand up to them, but we need everybody fit to do that.
Over the course of the tournament so far, Must, there's been lots of calls for maybe red card offences that haven't been pulled, and just even yesterday or this morning with the line ball, the Scottish line balls, they seem to be fairly skewed towards the Scottish side of the line out. Are the rules just not being implemented, the tournament so far?
The big thing I was fearful of in the competition prior to this, before it was the red card situation and the new laws for the replays and that. But in the under 20 cup this year, there was 8 red cards which had a profound effect on the outcome of matches. The fellas were reduced to 14, and the referees don't seem to be as trigger happy as I thought they might be, because there's been a huge talk about the issues of high tackling, and they're trying to make rugby safe. So I think the refs will have to start doing that, and they'll become aware of that when pressure comes on, because if there's going to be high tackling and fellas getting slaps in the head, and you know, they'll have to implement that rule. And I thought that would be important in this World Cup. It hasn't been so far, but it was in the under 20 World Cup. So maybe after this weekend, the refs might be spoken to, and you could see a few reds for anything above the waist.
All right, we move on to the Japan game now. Next week, we'll have a better, I suppose, sense of what state the squad is in later on in the week when the management issue an update. But would you expect Joe Schmidt to make wholesale changes for that game, or will it just be whoever's missing and maybe one or two positional switches? Or
I would expect that he would put out a fairly strong team, because Japan are probably the only team left who could trouble Ireland. So I wouldn't see him putting out too many of the second team. But having said that, when you saw all the subs that came in today, they were so good that maybe some of the young fellas are probably maybe better than some of the older fellas. So, it's hard to know, but I would say I don't think he'll treat it. I think he'll give it absolute respect and probably put out nearly the strongest team he can relative to what he has available. I would suggest that, because I can't see the rest of the teams like someone on that threatening us in any way, and he'll give all the other fellas a gallop in those situations. I would see him fronting up with a fairly decent team next Saturday.
Yeah, well, Shaluk, off to a great start in the Rugby World Cup. Thanks very much for joining us on the bigger event.
You're very welcome, Ciarán and Roy. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Moss. Always great to have former Ireland and Munster wing Moss Finn on the show to provide his expert analysis on what was an excellent Irish performance this morning. As I mentioned to Moss, I think expectations are going to be raised after that Ireland performance. It was excellent. Admittedly, Scotland were poor. They were very poor. But as Moss suggested there, it was more a case of Ireland making them look poor than Scotland being poor themselves. But expectations raised, job done, and now it's just a case of getting through the next few couple of games unscathed and then preparing for South Africa in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, it looks that way, all right. You'd be expecting Ireland should be coming through all those when they're ranked number one in the world. All the talk during the week, last week, of Scotland using shampoo in training practice for the...
Didn't seem to do much good for them today.
It didn't seem to do much good. But is it an obvious but silly question? Why don't they wear the gloves? You know, with the cut-off fingertips.
Like Macassar's, like.
Yeah, but I had to think for a second. But you know,
that's an old school reference right there. Big pair of yellow macassars.
Yeah, last time you played football. But you know, the gloves that don't have the fingers covered, we'll say, with the grip on them. Would it not just make sense to wear those?
Possibly, I don't know. I'd assume if it did make sense, people would be wearing them by now.
Yeah.
But the conditions there were terrible, especially in the second half. It deteriorated. But look, a win is win, and it was a decent win, bonus point win. Job done for Ireland, and Joe Schmidt certainly happy in the post-match press conference. But he was asked first about the toll it's had on his squad.
Tiger's fine. Johnny is fine. We decided to get him off, Connor off. We had two HIAs, Bundy and Pete. They're both symptom-free at the moment. That's reassuring, but we've got to go through the process. They fail HIA-1, so they'll go through HIA-2, HIA-3. That'll determine whether or not they've got a concussion. Beyond that, the minimum time you can turn around a player is 6 days, so we'll look at how that pans out over the next probably 24 hours when they do their HIA-2 and HIA-3. Johnny's fine. Thanks. Yep.
Joe, just after all the second row talk in the last few weeks, can you pay tribute to Ian Henderson's performance? What you saw?
Yeah, I thought he started the game really well. Obviously, we scored on the back of his burst. He is a powerful athlete. I thought he really accelerated well, got through those first couple of tackles. He worked his way around the pitch really well. Our line-out functioned really well with him and James Ryan sharing the responsibility of calling the line-out. And, you know, defensively, he worked really hard. Closing the gap, you can't afford to give Scotland any space at all, either on the outside or they play those trail runners, and I thought Ian Henderson was alert the whole time.
Rory, can you talk through your emotions when you not only get your fourth World Cup but also get a try in it?
It was a good start for us. I think when you start the tournament against a team like Scotland, you have a lot of nerves. You know you have to play well. You know you have to start well. And look, I think for us to get a couple of, for the forwards' point of view, to get a couple of tries in tight, it's pleasing. But look, I think we know that it's just a start and we need to get better. And I think it's nice to have played in four World Cups now, but ultimately from a personal point of view, that means nothing. That goes to the side, and it's about making sure that we get better as a collective as we go along.
Joe, if everyone had been fit, perhaps Jordan Larmour and Andrew Conway might not have started, but can you speak about their performances?
Yeah, we hadn't made any decisions earlier in the week, so they were first choice selections, and they played like that. I thought Jordan's energy, Andrew Conway's energy, they made a few errors, but very difficult conditions out there. Even prior to the rain, there was a little bit of film on the ball. It was quite slippery. So it is going to be one of those challenges if the weather comes in like that. I thought Andrew Conway finished his try superbly. Jordan Larmour was very good in the air. He looked dangerous. He opened them up one time and got him behind them. I think we probably made 10 line breaks, and Jordan and Andrew were the recipients of a couple of those, one for Andrew to score and one for Jordan to open people up. I thought he covered the space really well because that's so dangerous on the edges, Scotland, and he closed those channels down really well, both those guys. But, you know, so did Jacob Stockdale. I thought he was extra good defensively. He got Stuart Hogg a couple of times when he was sliding wide, and it just allowed us to get onto the front foot instead of them getting that space on the edge.
You've been asked about a couple of individuals, but as a team, the collective, the cohesion that we saw out there, what gave you most, what were you happiest with, I guess, and what do you feel needs a little bit of work for as you go through this pool?
I was delighted with all 23. I think one of the things that sometimes happens is you build a lead and then you lose a bit of cohesion when guys start filtering in and out. I didn't really detect that happened. Conditions made it really difficult for us to construct things, but we got the only try in the second half when a lot of those replacements were on. The scrum that we turned over with the replacements was really impressive, and I know Bestie was in the middle of that, but he had a couple of new partners either side of him with Andrew Porter and Dave Kilcoyne. So that was really pleasing, but also that front foot we got off to. You know, it just takes a bit of pressure off in the game. It means they have to chase it a little bit. They have to take a few more risks than we do. And at the same time, I was happy with the number of risks we did take. I know it's only a one pass play to play up the short side to a player like Jacob Stockdale, but it worked really well for us twice. And the first time we got nothing on the back of it, but it would have been great if we did. CJ Stander through the middle, we got nothing off. And Chris Farrell, when he got through off that scrum play, again, we didn't get the result we were looking for from. But when you build the pressure that we did, I think you're right. I think it is very much a collective performance.
That's Joe Schmidt there, happy with his team's performance in that win over Scotland today. Moving on to Japan now next Saturday morning. All right, a couple of full-time reports. Liverpool have held on against Chelsea. Joe Rawson.
It's finished. Chelsea 1, Liverpool 2. The Premier League leaders keep their 100% start to the campaign intact. But boy, did they have to work hard in the second half. Trent Alexander-Arnold's curling hit after being teed up from a free kick. And Roberto Firmino's header gave them a first half lead. But N'Golo Kante's brilliant goal on 71 minutes made it a nervy finish for the Merseysiders, who had to weather wave after wave of Chelsea attack late on. But Frank Lampard's side couldn't find the equaliser. Liverpool remain 5 points clear at the top. Full time, Chelsea 1, Liverpool 2.
And Arsenal coming back to beat Aston Villa this afternoon at the Emirates. Nigel Bidmead.
Arsenal 3, Aston Villa 2. Two goals in 4 minutes at the end of the game turned it around for 10-man Arsenal. John McGinn put Villa ahead on 20. Ainsley Maitland-Niles was sent off for a second yellow on 39. Nicolas Pepe, with his first goal for the club, equalised on 59 from the penalty spot, but 60 seconds later, Wesley's near-post flick restored Villa's lead. On 80, Callum Chambers lobbed Arsenal level once more before Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang hit the winner with a superb free kick. Arsenal 3, Villa 2.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're talking Douglas's win over Ballincollig.
Missed the show? Grab the Big Red Bench podcast at redfm.ie. Cork's Red FM.
Well, Douglas overcame Ballincollig in this afternoon's County Senior Football Championship quarter-final, which was on in Páirc Uaireann, and finished Douglas 1-12, Ballincollig 9 points. From your side, Ciarán, you were just glad it wasn't raining, I'd imagine.
Yes, actually, the sun came out as well, because we all got drowned last night.
I was watching it on TV last night, and I was like, I'm so glad I'm in the studio and I'm not out in that match, because it looked...
I think it was the tail end of a hurricane going across the Atlantic, I think we got. But it was horrific. But anyway, today the sun was out, pitch was in absolute pristine condition. You'd never know there was a monsoon the night before.
And two games on it as well.
Two hard hitting hurling matches. But the pitch was perfect today, so there was no excuse. But it just wasn't a thrilling encounter. Douglas will be glad to have come out of it. It wasn't real championship fair, I suppose you could say, if that's fair to say. Cork senior management, the entire lot of them were all there watching on anyway, so I don't know whether they picked anyone out. Personally, I think the best on the pitch was Shane Kingston, right, who won't be playing for the Cork Footballers next year, but he had a fantastic game. Sean Powder, I think, playing his first full 60 minutes for the club since he's got injured. He played very well, set up a goal as well. And I think Brian Boyle, the goalkeeper for Douglas, he'd made a couple of dodgy kickouts, which put Douglas under real pressure, and Ballincollig capitalised on some of them. But he pulled off three fantastic saves, and one of them he didn't know anything about. It was a big loop dropping ball in. Ballincollig caught it, turned, hit it through a couple of players, and it just bounced off him. He didn't know anything about it, but it was just such a fantastic save. He went down injured afterwards, but he stopped a certain goal, which could have brought Ballincollig back into it at the time. But it was a handy enough game, but it just didn't feel like a championship match, you know.
Yeah, Douglas 1-12, Ballincollig 9 points was the final score. This is the Douglas boss, Mick Evans.
Well, the second half, certainly, you know, we made a couple of changes again at halftime. We're lucky with the bench that we have, that we can bring fellas in, like Knight Hartness. Didn't know until, quite late that he was going to start. And for a young fellow who's only a minor, still in secondary school, he was outstanding in the middle of the pitch. Like, he was outstanding. He took responsibility there at one stage, and he kicked a point from 40 yards out that other fellas would be afraid to take. More experienced fellas, this guy is no fear, you know. So I'm delighted for them, because we were knocking on the door there for ages, and it's about time we got to a semi-final anyway. And after that, then, well, we'll take our chances.
There's a bit edgy there throughout the game, but you came back out in the second half.
I think it took us to see our biggest disadvantage was the fact that we hadn't played for a while, and they were only after playing a couple of weeks back or whatever. That's, you know, and it takes you a while to get up to the tempo of the game again. But I think, you know, second half, certainly, I mean, that's our bar now at this stage. Second half is the bar, that we have to go above that and drive on.
Five saves, by the way.
Pardon? Apparently, I guess at some stage his head would come in handy, so we thought he was knocked out. But I mean, in fairness to him, like, it was a great save. Hit him in the face. 100%. We thought we'd have pulled off another one below, but it was square ball, and that's the way it goes. We can't do anything about that. So, look, you know, we've put in a lot of work this season. we're hoping that we can maybe go all the way, but everybody hopes that as the start of the season. You know, we're in the last four now at least, which is a huge thing for Douglas, and we'll work hard now over the next 2 weeks, no matter who we get.
You're into the semi-final, there's still things to work on.
Oh, 100%. 100%, yeah. Like, you know, a lot of people wouldn't have known how Shane Kingston played there today, right? Mm. We don't know how he lasted an hour because he said nothing, trained all week, said nothing, but he's a serious chest infection. And but yet he put in a shift there, particularly in the first half, when we needed guys to carry the ball and use his pace and so on. He put in a great shift, but that's the kind of spirit we want in the team, you know, unless you're almost horizontal, you play.
He set up a good bit, actually. He broke through a lot. His runs they couldn't keep up with him.
Yeah. His runs will do that, because like any time you've played, like Sean Potter is coming back, that's the first 60 minutes he's played in 18 months, you know what I mean? So he's delighted, and there's very positive from that point of view. He's delighted that that he got in an hour, you know, and we're delighted for him as well, because he's had a bad 18 months.
Or no Sullivan, will he be okay the next day, do you think?
Concussion.
It's only a question.
Will that appear on any paper?
The underdogs.
Well, I put it to you this way, right? When you look at the performance of the two young fellas today, hard to get inside them. Absolutely. You know? Yeah. I'll tell you the real story afterwards, but I'm not. Well, he'll be in contention.
Let's just say you're running.
Is that okay? I should join for the fall or something, Mark.
Mark mentioned the goal there that you got as well, but it was fantastic. Dispossession from Potter.
100%. Yeah, he stole that out there, yeah, but that's experience and strength as well. You see his strength and his low centre of gravity when he got in for the ball, he was able to rip it, and you know, he set it up really. If he hadn't made that intervention, well, it would have come back down the field. But as you said, like, was the goal was going to give us momentum, and when we got it, so.
But there's also Kerrigan's first run through the middle of the park.
That's right.
A word for your full back line.
Well, I was delighted with them, really, and I think in the last 10 minutes, like, we decided we'd lock the defence, and in fairness, we locked the defence, and like, they were shooting, but they were shooting under pressure, you know, and we were delighted with that as well, you know. We were delighted with that. So, you know, we're, as we've told him just now, like, we've won nothing, but we're in the semi-final, you know. Yeah. So anything's possible.
And can you just, he made three fantastic saves, but maybe some of the kickouts in the first half put you under a bit of pressure as well.
We're never under pressure.
Yeah, that's Douglas boss Mick Evans there speaking after today's win over Ballincollig, claiming they're never under pressure, but after today's 6-point win over the Colic.
Yeah, but they were under pressure on some of those kickouts. Mm. But sure, look, they're happy they're going into a county semi-final. It's been a while since they've been there, so look, they'll all be happy in Douglas tonight. Disappointment in Ballincollig, though.
Yeah, last night, 3-in-a-row chasing Imokilly overcame a disappointing Sarside in the Senior Hurling Championship quarter-final in Porcupine. The weather, as we mentioned before, playing havoc with the game, made it difficult for both sides. Kieran spoke to Imokilly boss Fergal Condon.
Well, I suppose the weather played a big part in that game, didn't it?
Undoubtedly, they are. To be fair to Orphalus, they put in a fantastic shift there.
Right, we'll just come back to that in just a couple of seconds. The other quality's not great on that. We're just going to tidy that up just a little bit. But Imokilly looking to go for a 3-in-a-row. But the conditions last night in Porcupine, as Thomas mentioned, it was absolutely torrential. The rain, driving rain, and it just came down, bucketing down at one point. I was just watching it on TV in the first game. You could barely see across the pitch. But the conditions there are absolutely dreadful. But and as Kieran mentioned, not conducive to good free flowing hurling. So it was just a case of getting the job done, I suppose, for Imokilly last night. And they got that job done last night as well. So it was difficult enough for them, but they got the job done. And we're going to hear now from Fergal Condon after the game last night.
The weather played a big part.
No, you don't. We'll come back to that in just a little bit, but we'll hear from Fergal Condon in a minute. We'll move on and come back, and we're going to hear now from Peter O'Driscoll, who is the latest winner of the Talbot Collection Sports Awards. Peter led the Rebels to All-Ireland glory last month. Kieran spoke with Éilean Rovers clubman about picking up the award and the All-Ireland.
Yeah, I suppose it's a great honour to get to be recognised for these prizes, but you know, at the end of the day, I wouldn't be able to get these prizes without the team, so you know, we're just we're delighted as a collective group, and you know, it's nice for some of the individuals to be recognised.
Obviously, you mentioned it's great to be recognised, but you did have a fantastic year with the Cork Under-20s.
Yeah, we're delighted, I suppose, at the start of the year. And this is something we set out to do, was to win the Munster, win Ireland. And it was just about, you know, that was our collective aim. And if we all bought into it, we believe we could achieve it, and we're lucky enough to get there.
And look, you're being very relaxed about winning an All-Ireland, Peter, but it was a phenomenal achievement.
Yeah, I suppose with the two games, the Tyrone game and the Dublin game, we're back to really against the wall at different times. So, you know, the pressure is on in, so, you know, we can really relax about it now. The pressure is on, so, like I said. So, you know, we're just enjoying it now, and we're all back at club and stuff at the moment. So, you know, we're not giving too much thought these few days. And but I'm sure now when the winter and stuff comes, we'll be getting back together as a group and stuff.
Yeah, just on the Talbot Award, we'll talk about the under 20 win in a second, but the Talbot Award, it's nice, we already mentioned it's nice to be recognised, but for family and club members as well, it's nice.
Yeah, it is, you know, without my family and club, you know, nothing, you know, it wouldn't be possible to train at the level that we have to train at, and the club and very supportive, you know, of missing training and stuff like that. You know, we're still in senior championship, we're playing now tomorrow. And stuff like that. So they never had a problem with missing training or being absent or stuff like that. And, you know, my family have been very supportive. So, you know, I'm very grateful for all of that.
You won that award on the back of the All-Ireland win this year. Something you said around the time of the before the final was that, you know, Cork football being dead and buried, that it wasn't dead and buried. And he certainly went on and proved that.
Yeah, I suppose he did, you know. Well, I suppose at the end of the day, it wasn't really, no doubt, that's not why we went out and won the Irons, you know. It was all about, you know, it's just something we said we wanted to do, and, you know, I suppose it did prove a point, you know, and then Minors turn around and do the same 2 weeks later in the way, in the manner that they did it, you know. We were very, you know, it was great to see them following, I suppose you could say they followed our lead, and, mm-hmm. you know, no, definitely there's better times ahead.
And look, you've spoke about Keith Ricken as well, the influence he's had. He really is just a phenomenal person, I imagine, a phenomenal coach.
Yeah, everyone has the same opinion of Keith in the panel. You know, he's helped us all individually and collectively. So, you know, the work he's done this year and coming in at such a late stage and stuff. But I think it was the 29th of January or something, we met Keith, you know, and a lot of counties would be, you know, back and have the gym work and stuff done by then. So, you know, we were well behind schedule, but you know, in the manner Keith came in and did his, went about his work, you know, you know, we made that time up all better.
And I imagine you mentioned already that you're all the lads are back with their clubs. What's the plan next?
I suppose now we're playing Newstown in the county quarter finals tomorrow now. So, you know, it's about looking, concentrating in that game, and then hopefully we get the result there, and we look forward to the semi final.
Yeah, perfect. Well, look, Peter Driscoll, the latest winner of the Talbot Collection Award and captain of the Cork Under 20 footballers. Thanks very much for joining me.
No matter at all, thank you.
As Cork Under 20 captain Peter Driscoll, congratulations to him on winning the Talbot Collection Sports Award. Now, third time lucky. We'll go back to Fergal Condon, the McKinley boss, speaking after their win over Sarsfields last night.
Well, I suppose the weather played a big part in that game, tonight.
Undoubtedly, they are. To be fair, Tophilus. They put in a fantastic shift there, especially in the first half, which, believe it or not, I thought, like, I know we didn't score or whatever, but we had to dig in. Sarce came at us really strong. I suppose Offaly's defended well, and we made them shoot from outside, which was always a help, you know. They had to underscore us, and we turned over the pile of ball, and we brought it out. We got a few good scores then, and we came in with the lead at halftime, which put us in a good state. Like, the conditions are atrocious. So I suppose we... our focus was to get a good start in the second half, and in fairness to Bill, he won a great ball from the off, and Shamey slapped it over the bar and set us on our way. Look, it wasn't a night for classy hurling, no doubt, but you know, we are very happy to get out of here, and I thought that we did well for the conditions we were playing under.
Yeah, you got the goal already in the first half, but 20, I think it was 22 minutes before you got a point. I know the weather and all that, but really, if you want to be county champions for a third time, you should, you know.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah, but the elements were against us, like, you know. Scores aren't easy to come by either, you know. Sales had a lot of men behind the ball, which means they had a lot of men around the middle, which means they couldn't shoot.
I'm not sure we're designed to hear for Conan's interview this evening, just having some technical problems with our playout system here at the moment, but that was Fergal Condon speaking after last night's win.
Yeah, you got
the gist of it.
You got the gist of it. It's probably possible.
We'll show it up on our website later.
Yeah, you couldn't hear the torrential rain there, but it was pretty horrific. We were in the dugout doing that, myself and two other journalists, and just the rain was absolutely bucketing down. Thankfully, I don't think Bergy realised it, but the rain was coming down behind him, so he was blocking the rain from coming at us.
That was sound of it.
So, yeah, pretty sound. I don't think he realised it, but we knew what we were doing. Yeah, look, a comprehensive win in the end for McKilly, but...
Were you disappointed with Sarsfield?
You would be. You thought they would have come out with more. They started off fantastically. They really started fantastic in the game, and we were we were thinking to ourselves up in the press box that, you know, we could have a battle here. We could have a bit of a shock here, maybe. Because it took Imikili, despite the weather, you know, both teams had the weather. It wasn't just Imikili up against it. That it took them 22 minutes, I think, to get a point on the board. They'd got a goal, all right. But, they seemed a bit off. But coming out after half time, you didn't hear Fergal mention it there, but they obviously had words with the team. And they came out and really drove on in the second half. The game started to get away from Sarah's then. And then, you know, when games get away from teams, it can start descending into a bit of, it can get messy. And that's kind of what started to happen. And just look, Imikili are very, very strong. Yeah. They're still favourites for the county, but they have to overcome the Bears next in the semi.
Yeah, that'd be an absolute cracker. All right, the games were broadcast live on RT last night. John Myler, former Cork boss, his selector, former selector Kieran Fraggy Murphy, were the analysts last night, and they attracted a lot of headlines for their criticism of the refereeing in general in the Senior Hurling Championship in Cork. And they seem to suggest that the game is refereed too strictly, it's two stop start, and therefore it's Cork hurling as a result is a little bit softer compared to, as Myler mentioned, when he goes to Kilkenny or when he goes to Thurles. The game's refereed differently there. What's your take on that, Kim?
Like, actually, in all the years that Myler's been involved in management, all the times we've interviewed him, he's actually refused to talk about referees. So it's a bit of a shock, I suppose, for him to have.
Well, I suppose he's not involved anymore, so he can mention it now, maybe.
I suppose, yeah, maybe so. But still, like, if I don't think you can say that, actually, it affects the inter-county team, because those players on the Cork team would have played one game with their clubs before the Munster Championship. If you're being realistic, none of them would have really played league with the clubs. They would have played one championship game the first round, and then they're going back into the Cork setup, and Cork can have as many challenges or in-house matches as they want, and they have an in-house referee. If there's an issue with how the club games are being refereed, then surely they can just say, look, we want it refereed this way, X and Y, whatever. And whoever the referee is will do it that way.
This is what Myler said. He said, Cork is refereed by the rules of the book. When I was Thurles or matches in Kilkenny, it's a different game. They apply the rules there. That's just it. When you're playing the Munster Championship, it's totally different. I think it's happening. It's hampering Cork, the intensity of the game, the continuity of the game. The excitement isn't there. I know the conditions were poor, but there were two matches here last week that were stop-start as well, and there was no flow. The club game is refereed differently. In contrast, the referee in Kilkenny, you hardly see a referee in Kilkenny. So he's obviously advocating for the referees to just let it go a bit and not be pulling up on every little foul.
Yeah, but there's a big problem with that, because the referee is only blowing to the rule book. And like, how many players or management have actually picked up a rule book and looked at it? Because all they're doing is going on the matches that they see on the TV. Yeah. And those are left flow, because those referees are a different level. A lot of them have done All-Ireland finals, so they're not trying to tick boxes to get an All-Ireland final. So they referee it however they want, some of them. There's a rule book there. He says himself, Cork is refereed by the rules of the book. So, like, if you're going to leave some things go, where do you stop? You know, you're always going to have someone shouting. Like, if you're a Bears man, right? Just because you...
No, back in the day.
Back in the day. Well, just say, we're not picking on the Bears, but because you're an ex-Bears man, you're playing, you're looking for... You're at a neutral match. You're blowing for every foul and everything. Leave it flow. But then your team are playing. You're like, that's a free. You know, you can't win. And where do you draw the line? Well, you know, there's a rule book there. The referee, look, there could be more consistency. There probably should be more training courses. There's one a year that's an in-service. Yeah. It's not the start of the year. It probably should be done. I think at inter-county level, they meet every 3-4 weeks, or actually could be more, every 2 weeks, up in Croke Park, all the intercounty referees. There's no reason why something like that couldn't happen monthly in Cork, where things are thrown up, because things come up in the middle of the year, which, you know, if something came up in a match I was refereeing in the middle of the year, I'm going to forget it come January, February when I'm doing in service, you know. I think it's very worthwhile if something was brought in, maybe monthly or bi-monthly, that the referees could go in, have a meeting, go over things. But it's also, I think, very beneficial that if the clubs went and there was an information night or something, I think there should be something where the players can go in, check it out, and ask referees, blah, 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 blah. Because some referees bring in, some clubs bring in referees, top referees, to go over some rules with them. And they seem to do a lot better because they know the score. But the rule book is there. Everyone can see it. It can be downloaded for free off the GAA website. Every referee should have a rule book. And I'm sure would offer it to any player. Yeah. But like, this is the problem. There's rules there. Referees are only going by the rule book. Like, no referee cares who wins. No referee keeps a free count, you know? So, it's...
Ciarán going to bat there for the referees. Shock horror to anyone who's listening.
Not biased at all.
All right, we're running out of time, so we're going to talk football now. Local side Everton have been awarded the prestigious FAI Club Mark Award. The Cork side is the second Cork club to receive it. I've been speaking to club chairman Stephen Crowley about the award.
Started about 18 months ago. It's something we felt we had to do as a club. It's really a health check for the club, just to make sure we're going in the right direction. It allows us to kind of get a house back in order, to ensure it is in order. Yeah, so we're absolutely over the moon to have kind of met the criteria now and tick that box.
So was it a kind of a chance for you to assess everything from the ground up and make sure you're going the right way?
Absolutely. It's basically allowing you to take a step back and have a look at exactly what you're doing, from your coaching to your first aid to your governance to your child safety, to literally from top to bottom. You have a good root and branch review, basically, of the club.
Yeah, so like, it must be kind of reassuring to get this from the FA, say, look, you're going in the right direction, the club is being run correctly and properly.
Absolutely. We became the second club in Cork, second to Middleton, and when we received our club mark, it was 13th nationally. I think that's gone to 2025 now. But yeah, it is nice. I suppose it's a moving piece all the time, because as you get volunteers and you go back and you start again, you guard the vet them, your child safety and your coaching course. So it's an ongoing piece all the time. But yeah, it's great for us as a club, and you know, for people that are bringing their kids to the club, to know that we've our house in order, which is a big thing for us.
And how complicated was the process? How much work went into it?
There was a fair bit of work went into it, I worry. There was a lot of work into it, a lot of small, tedious bits. You know, you'd look at the document, it's 2 pages, and you go, geez, this is great. We'll rattle through this. But it's only when you dig into it, you know, are all your coaches Garda vetted? You know, if they're not, you got to go and you got to get them to fill in the bit of paperwork for it. Then you got to send that up to the FAI. They send it on to the Garda. You wait for that to come back. So that in itself is a slow process. Then obviously you have to set up with the FAI your child safety courses, your safeguarding courses. Again, it's educating the people that are helping you, that are volunteering to the club. You know, the days of, as I say, throwing a bag of ball and bibs for you are well and truly gone, you know.
I mean, like, the growth of Everton over the last couple of years has been phenomenal. I mean, like, how many teams do you have now, and how many kids are you catering for every week?
So we go from 5 up to senior now. At the moment we're at about 21 teams, which is absolutely astronomical, and it's constantly growing. You know, we had to enter a second under 12 team there during the week, which is fantastic, because look, at the end of the day, it's grand for kids to be training, kids want to play, and that's absolutely paramount. Our academy, which is the Dennis Oran Football Academy, is hugely successful on the Saturday afternoons. Every week there's new players coming in, and even as I say, even at the academy, from the smallest under fives, you're coaching kids now really from 5 up. So the growth has been phenomenal. We're coming up on 400 members now. It's absolutely huge and continues to grow, and obviously long may that last.
Yeah, certainly. So a couple of months back you put out an appeal on social media for coaches and that kind of thing, because you were struggling, I suppose, to get volunteers in. Has that kind of rectified itself now, or is that still ongoing?
It has, Rory, but I suppose you never stop, because as you get players in, you need to be able to coach them. You know, there's no point, and we've kind of said as a club, there's no point taking players in if we can't cater for them. We're better off at the start saying, well, look, we've got a problem here, it's a full house. So no, we're thankfully, and we've had to tap into parents a lot more, Rory. That's very, very important. The parents, but as I say, we help the parents, as I say, it's not just saying, right, you've done that now, see you later, give me a shout if there's a problem. You know, you bring them in under the club, we've got WhatsApp groups within the club, we have regular meetings within the club, so everybody kind of has a feeling and knows where the club is going.
And there's a pathway there for like licenses and stuff like that for players.
Absolutely,
coaches,
so you start now with your PDP1, PDP2, and you go up. And in fairness now, the FA have, I know they've come under a bit of pressure for different things recently, but the guys on the ground, your Stephen O'Mahony's, your Niall O'Regan, these guys are absolutely top class. They're only ever a phone call away, and you know, especially Stephen O'Mahony, you know, he's one that we've lent on, and I've met another meeting lined up with him next week. He's just fantastic. He's pointing in the right direction. He guides you, I suppose, you know. And it's a little bit unfair that these guys kind of get tarnished with what's gone on at the higher echelons of it, whereas these guys are doing the hard graft, and they're absolutely a credit to the FAI, really, you know.
As Chairman Steve would say, it never stops, does it?
It's tough going, all right, Rory. I'm sure if you ask my wife, she'll tell you it never stops. But you know, Rory, I'm only, I suppose, a small cog in a big wheel. You know, we've got fantastic committee members. We meet every Monday night. A lot of these guys will put hours upon hours in during the week. I'll be in work and these guys are up lining pitches, cutting grass and everything else that goes with it. You know, it's a monster of a club, no worry, and it keeps growing, and you gotta keep growing with it. But as I say, we are very, very lucky. We've got a fantastic group of coaches, managers, admin, committee people, and I say parents now have really kind of gotten involved with us as well, which is absolutely vital for us. You know?
And you kind of touched on the Dennis Irwin Academy there. You must be blown away by its success, for you.
Do you know what? We are, Rory. It was a part of the club that really needed a bit of work. We were very lucky that Tony O'Regan came back in as academy coordinator. This will be his second season at it, and I suppose he's just really turned it around. So, thankfully, one of the first things we've done, Dennis put his name to it, which obviously adds a lot of weight to it before you start. And it's, you know, Dennis hasn't done that just as a tick box. He's involved. He keeps an eye. He speaks to Tony quite regularly. He's back now in November, and we're hopefully going to launch two big things there, but we'll keep that on November. But the academy is fantastic, you know, and there, Rory, like, we don't ever cap the academy, so we welcome new players every week. You know, you'll find us on social media. And if there's anybody, boys and girls from the ages of 5 to 11, train out in Nina Park Sports Complex on a Saturday, and you know, we always welcome new players. But yeah, and it really has it's evolved, and long may that continue, because you know, you got to keep the, you know, if you're under sixes, go to under sevens, you got to go back in and get more under sixes on, and up it goes. But thankfully, the kids have just returned, and long may that last, and long may it continue.
Yeah, we wish you continued success, Stephen. Congratulations on the award as well, and best luck for the future.
Thanks very much for having me, Rory. Thank you.
And great to see my good friends at Everton going from strength to strength, and congratulations to them on that FAI Club Mark Award. Right, we're out of time. Alan Donovan's up next with Green on Red podcast online shortly. Follow us on Twitter at Big Red Bench. We're back next Saturday from 6. Talk to you then, folks.
The Big Red Bench, Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.